Hello, hello, I am Matt Williamson. This is the Locked On NFL Podcast. Usually we have our boy Mike Brenner on Wednesday, but he is here Tuesday. It's a strange week. We're not going to have a show on Thursday. Mike, how's it hanging?
Going great. Happy to be back on.
Very good, very good. Hey, last night was a fun game. One of the most playoff-like games we've seen on a Monday night. Teams that have some warts, but it sure seems as though the Falcons are getting hot at the right time. Seattle has some areas of concern, but the stars came out to play. I'm just curious your thoughts on how Matt Ryan has played of late. It seems that the offense is starting. Everyone was so critical of Sark can't figure out, you know, he's not going to be Shanahan. And maybe that's true, but Ryan's really been a really solid contributor all year long.
He really has. And even of late, I think he's started playing his best football over the last, you know, 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Certainly grade-wise, that's been the case. And the biggest thing, at least in our, you know, grading system, is the fact that he has protected the ball at the best rate of any quarterback this year. His rate of turnover-worthy throws, so, you know, negatively, you know, minus one grade throws or lower, is the lowest of any quarterback in the NFL. Now, he doesn't have the fewest interceptions in the NFL. He's had some bad luck in that regard in terms of tips and things getting picked. But he is protecting the ball and doing that well. So, you know, when you're sort of those sort of rates, the turnover-worthy throw rates usually tend to bear out better than just plain interception rates in terms of how many interceptions you have towards the end of the season. So it's been just the way he's been throwing the ball of late is not really surprising. He just wasn't as lucky at the beginning of the year in terms of all the other stuff going on.
Yeah, and last year was unbelievable. I mean, in terms of...
Mm-hmm. It's almost, obviously, he was going to regress. Yeah.
Yeah. One thought, and this goes back to last year with the Falcons, is I think his group of pass catchers, besides Julio, isn't as great as everybody thinks. You know, like, I have hope for Hooper, and I like how the running backs catch the ball. And Sanu's okay, but I don't think he has an elite group to throw to, unlike some people tend to think.
Well, it's hard to say. I think they are still a top 10 sort of pass catching unit, borderline top 5, but that's just because Julio Jones impacts defenses that much. Yeah. The guys outside of that, their number 2 receiver, you know, Mohamed Sanu probably isn't a top 10 number 2 receiver in the NFL right now, but Julio Jones is, in my opinion, far and away the best receiver in the NFL, just in terms of what he does to defenses. And then you just can't really measure that. And then I kind of like the way the pieces fit together on guys like Taylor Gabriel, where you have just this pure speed down the field that really tests them. And if you use them in a certain way, he's going to be effective. So I still do love, you know, the way they assembled that unit.
Yeah. And that's obviously a key piece. You know, they went out and got Goodwin in San Francisco. I mean, they want a true burner. I just don't know that it would be a terrible idea to use a second-round pick on another wideout. You know, I mean, like, they're not a team with a lot of needs. Julio does miss time. I had mentioned to just let you guys know we are brought to you by MyBookie. I'll tell you more about them in a moment. But, Mike, I want to run something by you, and this is kind of a big-picture thing, and it's a conversation I got in on Twitter last night, and I was shocked with how many people disagreed with me, but I said something along the lines of, Matt Ryan and Russell Wilson are on Hall of Fame career paces. And that doesn't mean if they'd go in this second. But many people bit back at me. You know, like, Ryan's never won it. Wilson is just a runaround guy. What side of the fence are you on there with me? I mean,
I do think, at least for Matt Ryan, I think he'd have to win at least one Super Bowl to even get in contention just because of the way the numbers of quarterbacks have exploded in recent years. It's just so hard to, unless you're truly, you know, unless you're truly putting up Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, elite type of numbers that are year in and year out, just things we haven't seen before. If you're just that sort of tier below, which I would put Matt Ryan that tier below where he's consistent, you know, he's 4,000 yards, he's borderline 30 touchdowns. There's just a handful of guys that have been sort of doing that or can do that. So you have to separate yourself by either getting the MVP awards. Now he has one. If he wins another, then he's in the conversation. Either getting a Super Bowl. Russell Wilson has one, doesn't have the MVP award yet. I think you need to get at least two of those total together to start putting yourself in the Hall of Fame conversation. So the fact that they have one and are probably midway through their careers Yeah, I could call that a Hall of Fame pace, but I'd have to see them get a second of either to actually put themselves in a realistic conversation for Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't think if they quit today, they go, but I just think that...
No, yeah, yeah.
I mean, if they play another 8 years at this pace or, you know, and they were showing things last night about Matt Ryan saying things like one of the youngest guys to ever hit X amount of yards or X amount of touchdowns in his first 60 games or... You know, and I know the game's changed dramatically. Like, Stafford's on those lists, too, you know, just from sheer volume and how the game has changed. But when it's all said and done, he's going to end up pretty high on the touchdown and yardage list, assuming he stays healthy.
Yeah, that is a big, assuming he stays healthy, because we've seen guys like, we thought, you know, you thought Phillip Rivers, you thought Ben Roethlisberger, you thought Eli Manning would start being, you know, guys who would end up high on those lists, but their downturn, their careers is only... You know, it's only three more years for Matt Ryan, so where they're at. So, you know, hopefully a lot of guys have been playing to 40 like Manning and Brady, but still it's not everyone that makes it there, you know, fully with that arm intact.
All right, I'm going to spit a couple more Seahawk names at you and give me a yes or no if they're Hall of Famers. Cool?
Okay.
Michael Bennett.
No. I'd say no.
And I think he's fallen off a little of late, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just doesn't. Well, one, he doesn't. I don't think he's going to get him because he's never had the sack numbers.
Right.
Sort of impact in the game. I would put him in sort of the top five for edge rushers, but he never really was purely dominant. And I think you really have to be to get in as a pass rusher.
He's a Pro Football Focus Hall of Famer, though, right? Don't you guys have huge numbers on him in his prime?
Yeah. So I'd say he probably led edge defenders at, probably twice in his career in terms of grading. He's been around top five probably six or seven times, but he didn't really have the longevity. I think there was probably like a six-year stretch that he really was on top of his game, which, like I said, as a pass rusher, you need a 10-year. You need to be doing it again and again, and I just don't think he was.
For example, Dwight Freeney, his teammate.
Yes, he's definitely going in.
He's definitely going in. Jimmy Graham.
That's so tough.
I think that's a close one.
The
tight
end position is so, it's so new in terms of, you know, receiving yardage and, you know, production at the position is just so foreign. Guys like Graham are putting up numbers that in the 80s, 90s, even early 2000s were unheard of. But now there's a handful of guys doing it. Travis Kelce, Rob Gronkowski, all in the same era, and he was never a blocker. He's never going to get confused as that. And then when you look at his, you know, sort of receiving stats in isolation, compare them to someone who may have played like wide receiver or even a slot receiver, they're not all that special. I think he needs, I don't think he is right now, I think he needs at least four or five more productive years to be in the conversation.
Which would shock me if they actually happen. I mean, he's mm-hmm. not what he used to
yeah,
be.
He's already,
putting
yeah.
up tons of touchdowns. With him... One thing I think it kind of helps him, sort of like you were saying, like Gronk's going to go, but he's kind of second of that generation because he's going to come up for balloting 5 years before Kelce and those guys. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So, and I think he could, yes. He's probably a toss-up at this point.
This is one
I think... Closer than Bennett, I'd say. Yeah.
Agreed. This is one no one seems to recognize, but I lean towards yes, or at least going that way. Bobby Wagner.
I would say yes if I had to. A few more productive years, and I'd say he's in.
He's not quite Keekly.
It's always hard. Yeah, I was going to say, it's always hard at linebacker because there's not really stats to point to, but he's going to have a ring, and he's going to have led, you know, one of the best defenses of all time, you know, mm-hmm. most consistent modern NFL defenses. So I would lean towards yes.
And Sherman, Earl, Cam.
I'd go two out of the three. I think Earl and Sherman. Cam is...
Earl's the easiest of the three for me.
Yeah, I think I would say Sherman's probably the easiest of the three just because he has the stats. And then Earl, I'd also put in as well just because he's been the best, you know, free safety of this sort of post-Ed Reed generation.
Right. To me, he's the best safety since Reed and Polamalu, and he's kind of held mm-hmm. that mantle for a long time. And in my opinion... of the great Seattle defenses we've seen over the years, he's the most important cog. Schematically.
Yeah, I think it's debatable between him and Sherman just because of they both, I think they both impact the scheme far more than any of the other, you know, the Chancellor, the Bobby Wagner, the Michael Bennett, they both impact the game far more. But yeah, if you said Earl Thomas, I wouldn't argue with you.
So I mentioned earlier that we are brought to you by MyBookie. And you know, ever since I've been started this podcast, and I've been doing podcasts now for like 13 years, people are always asking for betting advice. Usually it's, you know, what team, you know, should I bet the Falcons or Seattle? And frankly, last night I did not have a good feeling either way, and it kind of went as I thought. It was a great game. Or you got the Patriots or the Steelers, Chicago or Detroit. Well, let me tell you this. Where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. So that's why I always tell people to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been in this business for years, and their rep is rock solid. They do 100% cash bonuses, so right off the bat, you're making money for doing nothing. And they have the fastest payouts. Seriously, just 2 business days. I've done it before, and it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. You know who's going to win, right? I tell you that. Lay down some cash and win big today. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have live in-game betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and an all-new mobile site that makes wagering on the go a breeze. So join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to 100% bonus. So whatever you put in, they're going to match it. It's free money. Use our promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. So, Mike, I know you've been doing some Cowboy stuff, and I'm very interested to know, to dig into what you've started there. But before we do, I got into a bit of a Twitter fight during the Eagles-Cowboys game that all of a sudden the narrative seems to be that Dak is overrated and he doesn't elevate those around him and everybody's dealing with injuries. Quit crying about Tyron Smith and Zeke being out and Sean Lee. And I know people don't think that impacts him, but clearly the Cowboys' defense is one with Lee and one without. You know, so what's your opinion on Dak? He could be on my team any day.
So there was one big stat that I pulled out in this article I wrote today that is in the Washington Post on Dak that I thought was by far the most telling, and it's pretty telling for any quarterback. But in games this season, when he's been pressured on at least 40% of his dropbacks. So when he's been, you know, uncomfortable, that's like the Russell Wilson line, you know, when guys are really under pressure a lot to where you can tell it's impacting their game, his passer rating under pressure is 39.8. So Wow. Awful. That's almost, you know, spiking the ball into the ground level. That's 39.8 passer rating under pressure on games where been pressured on 40% of his dropbacks. And he's converting pressure to sacks in those games on 21.7% of his pressure dropback. So a fairly high rate, one of the highest rates in the NFL. In all other games, his passer rating under pressure is 90. And he's converting pressure to sacks at only 9% of his pressure dropbacks. Basically meaning when you can really get after him and he is uncomfortable, he just loses under pressure. He's not making good decisions with the football, doesn't know where to go. But when he has that comfort level, when he feels like his offensive line is holding up, he's not taking the sacks. He's making throws when the pocket does end up collapsing because he's not worried about it. He doesn't think that it's going to result in a sack. He doesn't think that his O-line's going to not, you know, hold up. So when you can actually impact him with the pressure, he sort of crumbles. And so that to me was by far the biggest takeaway. And that is, you know, when you don't have Tyron Smith, you don't have that peace of mind. It's hard to measure for a quarterback, but we've seen the offense the last 2 weeks. He's not been the same guy because of it. So it's hard to say, you know, would this have been his rookie year if he was, you know, in a different situation? Would he have looked like this all throughout his career? Which I don't think he's looked terrible the last 2 weeks. He's just really not, like I said, when the pressure does come, he's really had no recourse. So, I'm with you in that Dak's not as probably bad as he's been recently, but he probably was in a perfectly ideal situation, you know, those other games last season when he did look like he was going to be this all-world quarterback.
Great points. I mean, absolutely. I didn't fault him for the Falcons game where they made Claiborne look like Derek Thomas. You know, that one I thought was an unwinnable situation. I thought he played his worst game that I can remember, though, against the Eagles, who, granted, are a better defense than Atlanta, better pass rushers, but I thought Dak didn't make plays that he could have. And I think
he's always struggled with the Eagles. I think it's two worst games last year as well, where he gets Philly, or one of his one. Then they played him in Week 17. So
maybe there's more coaching to that than we realize too. I mean, they may have figured him out a little bit. And I also think, you know, you said this to some degree. You know, most guys don't have a Tyron Smith or 90% of a Tyron Smith protecting their blind side. And what an amazing advantage that has been for him. And if he can't operate without that guy, I think that's a big black mark.
Yeah, that's the thing, is if he can't adjust, if there really is, because he's always, he kind of takes his, he really does cherish that sort of extra half second. Just over the course of his career, I've always sort of thought he will wait that extra split second to get, you know, a guy open on, you know, Cole Beasley getting the whip right. He's not immediately ripping it off the snap of the ball. He's not quite as quick as someone like a Drew Brees or even Alex Smith. He takes that extra hitch to get his time for those intermediate routes to develop. And when you don't have that, all of a sudden, you know, your internal clock speeds up. A lot of different things happen that make you look like a far worse quarterback than you could be with that protection. So, yeah, it is, like I said, if I wrote in the article, if they miss him this Thursday night against the Chargers, we're going up against Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram, they're done for all intents and purposes. They will not be making the playoffs.
No, I think that's a good point. I'm definitely going to take the Chargers in that game. And I also think it worked against Dak that leading into that game, many people were pumping up Dak versus Wentz. They're going to play against each other forever, and who's the better player? I mean, to me, that wasn't even a conversation, and Wentz is lighting it up while Dak's having a tough time, and now all of a sudden Dak stinks, and Wentz is the next Tom Brady.
Yeah, no, you're never as good as, you know, people say. You're never as bad. So there is somewhere in the middle, but if you really can't perform behind this offensive line, that's going to be scary for the Cowboys moving forward.
Last Cowboys point, well, two of them. What does the loss of Zeke truly mean to them? And do you agree with me on the defense with and without Sean Lee?
Yeah, 100% with the Lee. I'll get to that in a sec. But the Zeke thing, I actually think is not, I don't think it's as big a loss as
just because he's a running back.
Sort of being made out to. They look at the running game the past 2 weeks. You know, Alfred Morris averaging over 5 yards a carry. They had holes. They didn't really commit to it as much as they do with Ezekiel Elliott in, and that there's something to that in terms of how much the defense worries about it and how much the offense worries about it. There is how much you were willing to commit to it if it's not a guy like Zeke back there. But, you know, they almost committed to a fault to Ezekiel Elliott in a lot of games this year where he wasn't getting it done, and that cost them some wins. So I do think it really wasn't on, these last two games weren't on Ezekiel Elliott. If he was there, I don't think the result would have been any different. Maybe going forward in a close game, it could impact, but I really just don't think it's that big of a downgrade to Alfred Morris that you're really going to be costing you games in the future. The Sean Lee and the Tyron Smith injuries were far more impactful. The Smith injury we've obviously explored, and you've seen the results. Like, those were very obvious. The Lee, not quite as obvious, but what he does for that defense, run game is, like, he is their run defense for all intents and purposes. When he is in there, he is cleaning up holes for that defensive line, because they're not like it's gap control defense where everyone fills their gap and all of a sudden, you know, whoever it gets spilled to or forced to is the guy who makes the play. No, it's that D-line is just like slanting or stunting or trying to create havoc in the backfield. And then if they don't make the play, it's on a linebacker to find out where that ball is supposed to be going. He doesn't have his one determined gap. He has to go find where that running back should be going. And if you don't have a guy who has those sort of instincts, who has that ability to read and react on the fly, your run defense is just going to suffer. And that's, to me, is Jalen Smith, to him, is night and day right now. Jalen Smith, Sean Lee, they are downgrading.
Oh, not even close.
One of the biggest downgrades of any position. You know, it's like going from Tyron Smith to to Chaz Green and Byron Bell. It's that big of a downgrade at a position that's probably not as valuable, but in that Cowboys defense, what he does, it's just very valuable. So, yeah, that has been huge for that defense. They're just not going to be a good or even competent run defense without him.
I don't know if I ever told you this, but Sean Lee grew up about, he's walking distance from where I'm sitting now, and my kids are like same grade school. There's a Sean Lee jersey when you walk in their grade school, and he went to high school here at Upper St. Clair. And when he came out, I was a recruiting assistant at Pitt, and he's my all-time biggest miss. I didn't think he was good enough to play at Pitt.
Oh.
He was a free safety and a running back, and I didn't think he was going to get big enough to play linebacker. And, dude, he was a white linebacker. He was going to Penn State no matter what. But, you know, but he was my all-time big miss.
Something you come running, yeah.
Oh, I mean, you drink the Kool-Aid, you go up there with Jopa, the white linebacker, forget about it. Last thing along those lines, too, with the Cowboys, and I think I've heard you say this on other outlets, but I don't want to put words in your mouth, that even when last season was completed, I still was on the soapbox that the Cowboys should have taken Jalen Ramsey instead of Zeke.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was one of your things. Yeah.
I thought it was, at the time, I thought it was one of the worst picks in the entire draft. Top five pick, and I said the same thing with Leonard Fournette this year. And it's like, I don't care that your team had this big turnaround with him. It just, you didn't get the value. The value was far less that running back than it was at cornerback. And I think I said, you probably saw it on Twitter, I said, if they were free agents right now, Jalen Ramsey would get a contract twice the size of Ezekiel Elliott's.
Or if we're starting a team from scratch, I want Ramsey in the first round. You know,
you're taking Ramsey in the a top five pick right now. You're not taking Ezekiel Elliott until maybe the third or fourth round. It's just that's how positional you sort of have to look at in the draft, positional value, what you're actually getting, and you're paying Ezekiel Elliott $6 million. You know, we're paying him top 10 running back money. To then draft him in the top five, to then waste a draft pick on him. I never agreed with it. I think the results right now, they would kill the switch right now and have Jalen Ramsey instead of Ezekiel Elliott. But it is what, you can't just look at picks and did you hit or not. It's sort of when you were on the board, who could you realistically have gotten? Yeah, because if there were five, if you're the 2011 draft and there were, there's five Hall of Famers there that got drafted behind you and you drafted someone else, all of a sudden it looks like a far worse pick than what you did. And then if you just got like a guy who was good in a weak draft. So I do think that in retrospect, it was a very, very bad pick, I'll say.
Yeah. Like one of the biggest crimes Eric Ebron committed was getting drafted ahead of Aaron Donald and Odell Beckham.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't his fault, but that's part of why he's so hated. One step further with the Cowboys. And this is something we'll never know. But they were sitting there at four, and Goff, Wentz, and Bosa all went off the board. I think they would have taken any of those three ahead of Elliott and certainly should have. And if you look at those top five in terms of value, contract, all those things, Elliott's clearly number five, kind of like you said.
Yeah, there are four guys, or two guys there, the two non-quarterbacks on Hall of Fame sort of paces to start their career. And the quarterbacks are on their way to being franchise quarterbacks. And well, you got a running back who has been suspended now. So, fine player, but you still have a running back who's probably not a top three running back in the NFL right now. So, what can you do?
All right, last thing I wanted to touch on with Mike is the Vikings. I thought this was sort of a playoff-type game, playoff-type win over the Rams, and I mentioned yesterday that I expect McVay to use this as very much a learning process. Guys, this is what you have to expect if you're a winner going into a tough team. The Rams have a tough schedule the rest of the way. But all the talk last week, and it made me insane, was, boy, you got to get Teddy Bridgewater in there. And I got to come clean. I wasn't a Bridgewater fan before the knee injury. I wasn't a Bridgewater fan coming out of school. He has never played in this offense. And I hope those things quiet down. I'm curious your thoughts on the Vikings overall as a contender and the Keenum versus Bridgewater thing.
Yeah, I think the Vikings are certainly a contender. They're going to have a tough – there's just some good teams in the NFC. I think, the Saints and the Eagles are probably two of the top three teams in the NFL right now. So they're going to have an uphill climb in terms of, one, either getting a first-round bye, and two, then making it through, two games or three games all the way to the Super Bowl, especially with, like you mentioned – He is still Case Keenum at quarterback. He's still not Drew Brees. He's not Carson Wentz. But I do think he is the better option right now than Teddy Bridgewater. You don't come back from a very, very serious knee injury like Bridgewater did and just start lighting the world on fire. That's just probably not going to be the case. And like you mentioned, it's a new offense for Bridgewater as well. We've never seen what he's done in that offense. And Case Keenum's playing probably as good as Teddy Bridgewater's ever played in his entire career. He's playing good football right now. He's protecting the football. He is making plays outside the pocket. He's making plays with his legs. He's having defenses have to respect his arms, have to respect his arm down the field, which Bridgewater never really was one to challenge down the field routinely. Keenum's doing that. So there's a lot of reasons that point to Keenum. And you're a head coach in the NFL. You're winning with a guy. It would be just insane to me for them to switch courses. There's no – it's just not going to happen, I don't think, this season.
Especially
even
if
Keenum
win.
Throws out a dud. Yeah. Keenum throws out a dud some week, he's still going to be QB. One.
I just worry, like you said, his dud's going to be in the wild card round or the – you know, it's going to be against the Saints or the Eagles, and inevitably that's going to cost the Vikings their shot. Last question along those lines, though. I think that might be the most interesting quarterback situation in the offseason. Bridgewater's a free agent. Bradford's a free agent. How much is Keenum up after this year, or does he have one more year? I'm not positive. But what do you do?
Ooh, I can tell you. Yeah, that is going to be fun because, like you said, if you don't really play Bridgewater in this, you don't know what you have with him.
Right.
And you drafted him, you know, in the first round. You have a lot invested in him. You have a lot invested in Bradford. You have almost nothing invested in Keenum. Yet, at the same time, it's like, this guy leads you to an NFC championship.
12-4
or something.
Right,
Super Bowl. Yeah, where do you go from there? All of a sudden, I don't think they're going to want to, especially if it's Keenum does play this well, he's probably not going to get what Bradford gets on the open market, or even what Bridgewater might get on the open market. He might be still the cheapest of the bunch just because of his, you know, career and track record, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I don't know where they're going to go from there. They have a weird, odd,
really
oddly weird amount of options. But
they're a QB needy team, though. You know, in a way.
Yeah, it's almost like they still don't have a franchise guy. They're almost like, they're almost still in QB purgatory. You're not going to, if they sign, you know, Keenum for $15, $20 million a year, there's no guarantee that he's going to be.
That's a terrible idea.
Turn it, be anything more than, what he is now. So, it's a really weird situation. Maybe they just draft one in the, wherever they end up picking. So, I don't know. I have no real handle on where they'd go. I'd imagine that at least one will be sticking around, though, in 2018.
Yeah, and I guess my answer, and I don't think Keenum's a free agent, and assuming he isn't,
okay.
I think Keenum is your guy, and then you draft one, but that's going to be the 28th pick in the draft.
Yeah, but it's also, if Keenum's, you know, giving you competent play at a low dollar number, all of a sudden you can put even more talent around him. You're at the that sort of that lottery ticket of
Dalvin
cheap
Cook
quarterback
comes back.
Play. Yeah, you get Dalvin Cook back, you can maybe sign a couple more guys, and then, you know, if he's playing at this level, you can win a Super Bowl with quarterback playing at his level. You just need, you know, you need a lot of talent around him, and I think they got a lot of talent. If you could add more to that roster, all of a sudden, that's a team built for success in the long term, even, you know, irrespective of the quarterback position.
I'm just thinking off the top of my head, but I think you're right. I mean, if you don't have the Bradford money invested at the quarterback, and you're just paying Keenum, and you go out and Cook's coming back, all of a sudden you're a team that doesn't have many needs. Maybe you land the best guard on the market or a great defensive tackle, and then you go to the draft without massive needs, trade your first and your second to move up to get the quarterback at 15.
Or, yeah, just however you want to play it at that point, the world's sort of your oyster. If you do want to even just sort of punt on the quarterback position, or they could even be players for, you know, it is a wide-open quarterback market. You know, Kirk Cousins might be on the market. There might be other starters, Alex Smith sort of, that are available. They could, you know, be in the market for a quarterback like they were when they traded for Bradford again.
Well, Mike, this is great. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. We will talk next week. I appreciate everything. Over and out, man. Take care.
Yeah, sounds good. Have a good Thanksgiving, Matt.
You too, bud. We'll see you.